How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we have 50% of Gwynn and Chris with us. As I told you and as I promised, Tony Gwynn Jr. was making his way from Peoria Sports Complex to his humble abode in Peoria, Arizona, and he is with us now. And Sam Levitt is going to be joining us here for this segment as well. Hello, Tony. How's your day going?
My day is going well, Scrave. How about yours?
It's been fantastic, actually. Sam and I are just having some great conversations.
I think your math is a little bit off, though. 50%, there's three of us.
50% of Gwynn and Chris.
How are you and I 50%?
You're 50%. Chris is 0%.
Oh, you know what, Scravy?
Oh, you're going to blame me for your bad math this time? I got.
First of all, unlike you, apparently, when we say Gwynn and Chris, I include all three of us.
That's true.
Maybe I should go ahead and cut you out, and it'd just be me and Chris. And then
no, because then I'll feel sad, and I'll feel left out.
I'm just saying, if I'm including you, apparently I shouldn't.
Okay, there is 66.6% of Gwynn and Chris here in the building today. Matt Scravy, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello back on Friday. Yes, Sam.
I don't know, Tony, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, but apparently 97.3 The Fan is hiring board operators. So, Scravy better look out.
Oh, that's where you're going with this.
He clearly doesn't want to be a part of this anymore. He's
Scravy better look
himself out. So.
I don't know.
No, I
writing may be on the wall.
I don't really want to go back in time in my career. I think that this is a great opportunity for sure for someone who wants to start their radio career. That is absolutely 100% true. Because this is how you get in.
What have you guys been talking about?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
it's been a little all over the place. We've talked Padres. We've talked a lot of San Diego FC. We had a great interview in our last segment.
We talked Ziegler.
Which, you'll hear again.
We talked
to Mark Ziegler, Aztecs.
Hey, Tony, did you know?
Love is Blind.
You guys, I'm sorry, Scravy, loading up on the guests when your boys ain't here. Huh? Get a guest when we're here. What is that?
It all worked out
today. I wish we had some guests sometimes.
It all worked out today. It's not like I planned this or anything like that.
It was a jam-packed 2 hours. I mean, we were all over the place.
Love it.
Aztecs. Love it. Padres, mm-hmm. San Diego FC, we talk TV.
Love is Blind.
We talk Peoria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2 hours, jam-packed. Quality radio program.
Apparently, Jesse and I are making the rounds for our laughter when Mike Malinsky decided that he had the ABS call. Did you guys see this?
No, what?
I didn't. I saw Jesse post about it, I think, on Instagram. I haven't watched.
Yeah, well, so Brett Sullivan and home plate umpire Mike Malinsky, who I know I think is a great umpire, and actually has a sense of humor, right? I don't know that the people could hear what I could hear in my ear. And that was Mike Malinsky and Brett Sullivan kind of giving each other, you know what, right?
The business.
At one point, I think Malinsky says, horse bleep frame job or something along that line. It was like 2 pitches before. And then 2 pitches later, there's a close call and, Brett Sullivan challenges it. And so we go to the screen. It comes back. Mike Malinsky got it right. He comes back on and he says, what did he say? Gosh, I can't remember.
I'm trying to look for this
exact
right now.
Quote. Hold up. I'm going to get it for you. Gosh, I think it's something along the lines of, as expected, The call was correct.
Oh.
Let me pull it up because I know I'm messing it up right now. But it was hilarious. Both Jesse and I started. Oh, that's what it was. The call is surprisingly correct.
Surprisingly correct.
I think he was giving Brett a hard time because they had been kind of going back and forth. But it was all in good fun. Nobody was mad at each other.
Yeah.
It was quite hilarious. It was quite hilarious.
I like that. You know what it reminds me of, Tony? I don't remember the NBA referee's name that when he does the review announcements into the camera, like he really, really plays
it
up.
He's
like doing a
it's
whole.
Scott Foster.
Is it? Whoever it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. So hey, if they want to get like sort of personality with these announcements, I'm in. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, that, I think.
The reason why it works so well is because it's Mike. I don't think there aren't enough guys who are okay making fun of themselves, and so therefore it makes it a little bit less. I don't know that there's enough. I would love it, and I would love to be wrong on this, but I don't think there are enough umpires that have his type of person. I mean, this guy was rocking a man bun a few years ago, and rocking it proudly, no shame at all, and so. Yeah, I don't think there's enough guys, but it was funny. It was definitely funny.
Yeah.
What do you think of the pods today, Sam? I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
To be honest with you, I didn't see much.
You were on the show.
Yeah, well, I had enough time to probably watch Kolek start and stick around for like an hour or so, but I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just going to be honest. I was out of there by 12:30. stopped at Trader Joe's on my way home, got groceries, cleaned up my apartment.
Good for you, man.
I'm just going to, could I have caught the beginning of the game? I could. So I haven't seen a pitch that Kolek through or anything, but the box score looked good, Tony.
He was good, man. Yeah, I mean, that sinker was sinking, and he was getting ground ball, and he showed off the changeup that he's been working on a little bit. He was good, man. It's pretty. His innings were clean. Really, all of the big league guys, are guys we expect on the roster today, threw the ball really well. They threw the ball really well. So, you know, good to see there. You got to see DeVries double late in that game.
Oh.
I'm still continue to be impressed by Salas's approach at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
He continues to, you know, last couple of years he looked overmatched at times. I don't see that anymore. I see a dude that is confident in his approach. Now today he hit the ball well. He had the double in and off the Dodgers the other day. So I like his improvement as it is. Every time you see him, he seems to get a little bit better.
Right.
That's great. Tony, did you see what happened in the backfields with Ryoki Sasaki earlier today?
Yeah, I know you guys saw. I know everybody is like, oh, yes.
Oh, Scraby is so pumped up.
Yes,
Scraby
I am.
So fired up.
First batter he ever sees in Major League Baseball, and he gives up a home run. Vindicated.
Hey, this but you know, that's what happens. This is the big leagues, dog.
I know, and I also know it's the backfields of spring training. But I'm going to run with this because that is the best case possible.
But if you run with this, you run the risk of looking foolish when it's all said and done.
I have never said that this is going to translate to the season. I'm just happy that he gave up a bomb in the first hitter he faced.
Fine,
makes me feel better about myself.
He gave up two.
He did. You're right.
He gave up another one. One of them was to what's his name? Kyle Teal, who was one of the big prospects that came back to the White Sox for Crochet. There was another one, apparently. I cannot remember who that was, the second one.
It's okay.
Teal's ball looked like it still hasn't landed. That ball looked like that boy was hit to the moon right there.
Before people take it too far, I know that this is not going to translate to the rest of the season. It just is fun to see so far.
Yeah. I mean, I think even had Ryoki Sasaki been a Padre, I think it was pretty clear, you know, coming in that he was somebody who's still, and I'm not saying that what happened on the backfields today is evidence of this. It's the backfields on February 25th.
That's
in
what
Glendale,
Scraby might try to make it out to be.
I'm recording this right now and edited it up.
But
later.
he was somebody who, it wasn't a secret that there was the thought that he may, you know, need a little development, little seasoning, you know, to become more of a complete version of himself. And he is only 23 years old, and he's going to be pitching for the first time in Major League Baseball. So, look, just on a totally non-biased, non-Padre perspective level, like, wouldn't surprise me if there's, you know, if there are some early struggles, just like there were for Yamamoto as well last year, who's older and more experienced. Yeah,
exactly. And for that reason, I wouldn't be surprised if these hiccups are different, a lot different than what Yamamoto had. I think that was, you know, him adjusting. He'd played at high levels before. He's also had the experience of doing it for a while in Japan. This is not the case for Sasaki. I mean, this would be like a young minor leaguer coming up and, you know, coming up with a electric stuff, but hasn't played baseball at this level yet. And so I wouldn't be surprised if this is his hiccups are a little bit bigger than what Yamamoto's was last year.
Mm. Tony, I got a question for you, unless we got to go to break, Scraby. If we
can
squeeze it in.
You're the leader here.
Okay,
what do you think, Scraby?
You could squeeze it in.
Squeeze it in? Okay. Tony, fifth starter spot, Padres.
Yes.
Waldron, yeah. Kolek, Vasquez, Kyle Hart threw on the backfields in a sim game today. You know, maybe there's even another name or two now you could add into that mix. How do you view the competition for the fifth spot? I'm not asking you for a leader in the clubhouse right now, but just generally, as these guys compete, at least this early on.
I think it's wide open. I think, Vasquez and Waldron, because of the experience they have last year and being in the rotation at different times, I think they got an idea of what it's going to take. Kolek, you know, he's going to have learning how to be a starter. Not really learning, because he did it in the minor leagues, but doing it at the big league level and, you know, competing, you know, being stretched out, all that, and competing for the fifth spot. And then who was the last one I'm missing?
Kyle Hart.
I haven't got a chance to see
Kyle the lefty.
The lefty. I haven't got a chance to see him yet, but he's coming back trying to prove himself in this league. You know, he did really well in the KBO. Now he's coming back over here to try to establish himself as a big league starter. So I would say I'm not handicapping it or anything, but I would say that Waldron and Vasquez have kind of the leg up because they've kind of experienced it already.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you, and from what I understand, it's wide open. You said, I agree with you though. I would think Waldron has that leg up. And also just because we've seen Matt Waldron for extended stretches have a lot of success. I mean, it's really easy to forget how good he was for a couple of months.
He was their best starter for a couple months.
Yeah. I mean, how much he meant to the rotation when Darvish was out, when Musgrove was out. So, you know, there's a little proof in the pudding there. And look, I think the thing with Matt too, Tony, is, you know, there's a little bit of unknown there because he's still such a, I don't know if work in progress is the right term, but there's unknown with his knuckleball and how much he may use it and how that could impact, you know, the type of pitcher he can become, the ceiling he has. But, you know, he is the one guy at all these guys that you saw, you know, for a pretty extended stretch, him be pretty darn effective. So I'm with you. I think Matt Waldron could be very good. Yeah.
That's why I continue to loop in Vasquez, because he's the only one with, to me, he has less variables because his pitches aren't, question marks, you know, in terms of the unknown of knuckleball, like you were saying. He has, you know, by Major League Baseball standards, he has, you know, your regular stuff. And so for him, I think it's just a matter of being consistent in the zone. That's his biggest flaw, I think.
Yeah.
He gets into traffic. Now, he's brilliant getting in and out of that traffic, but it'd be nice to just have clean innings. He ends up throwing so many more pitches because he's working with traffic. So it's going to be a good race. The thing is, it wasn't that long ago there wasn't too many names we had because we were filling a fourth and a fifth spot. Right now, Pavetta slides into that four. Now you got a kind of a healthy competition at that number five spot.
Yeah, it was funny. Mike Schilt, after the game yesterday, he said Randy was playing traffic cop yesterday, and I think that's a pretty good way to put it as far as like what he did last year as well. Although Tony, you know, as we're talking about it, I think what's interesting, if the top three to four of their rotation is what we expect them to be, you know, Randy, even if he's like the best version of what he was last year, which is a lot of base runners, gives up hits, but he figures it out through five, six innings. You know what? You take that in a fifth starter, could work out just fine, you know, as your number five. So, it's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Scrape, are you ready to go to break? Is that what time it is?
Yeah, we could go to break. I think we're saying goodbye to Sammy Love, though. So thank you very much, Sam.
All right. Sam, Tony, I'll see you tomorrow. Scraby, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good. When we get back, we have we'll check in with Tony. We'll see what's going on with him. But the tush push is becoming something that is becoming a conversation around the NFL, Tony. And I'll tell you exactly what is going on the other side on 97.3 The Fan.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember to listen at 5:30 for us to announce today's biggest fan contest, or winner, actually. That's what I'm trying to say here. I'm trying to, like, turn off the chat thing. I don't know why I keep doing this, Tony. I don't know why. It's just very dumb of me. It's very stupid of me. All right, I got it. Now, remember to listen at 5:30 for us to announce today's biggest fan for a chance to qualify for a night in our Odyssey suite at a future Padres game. Register your name at 973thefansd.com/biggestfan in order to potentially have your name called. You got me?
Can you hear me?
I think.
Why does it sound so low?
I don't know. All of a sudden, it does sound very low.
Check. There we go.
I didn't have you down this time like I had Sam earlier, and he was talking to me, too. I'm not doing very good at that.
Boom. I'm ready.
All right. So the Packers were indeed, Tony, the team.
I got it right.
That is complaining about the whole tush push thing. Now, we have some more information on it, and Nick Sirianni has also spoken out about it. But what Packers CEO Mark Murphy said about the whole tush push thing, it's very apparent as to why they hate it. So he was asked on their website in like a Packers.com article, what are your thoughts on the brotherly shove? It seems that the Eagles have perfected it. Mark Murphy, the CEO, says, I am not a fan of this play. There is no skill involved, and it is almost an automatic first down on plays of a yard or less. The series of plays with the Commanders jumping off sides in the NFC Championship was ridiculous. The referee even threatened to give the Eagles an automatic touchdown if the Commanders did not stop it. I would like to see the league prohibit pushing or aiding the runner on this play, which is the quarterback. There used to be a rule prohibiting this, but it's no longer enforced because I believe it was thought to be too hard for the officials to see. The play is bad for the game, and we should go back to prohibiting the push of the runner. This would bring back the traditional quarterback sneak. And then here's where he goes a little bit into the fandom of the Packers. That worked pretty well for Bart Starr and the Packers in the Ice Bowl. So that was very lame.
That line caught your attention there.
It was very lame. That worked for Bart Starr and the Packers.
What do you expect from my guy from Green Bay? I mean, that's
I expected you not to be a baby.
Well, they definitely should stop being babies. That's first and foremost. And hello, guy, the quarterback is the most expensive piece of equipment you have on the field. They don't want to go back to the old QB sneaks. As a matter of fact, the old QB sneaks haven't gone anywhere. I watched Josh Allen do it like every week, along with a bunch of other quarterbacks. So, like, you can still do that. You just can't do the tush push because you're not good enough to do it. So, you know, hang with him, buddy.
Now, I got to say that Nick Sirianni was, you know, he can be a little much. He can be a little
much. He's allowed to be a little much.
I know.
He's
he won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so get off his back, man. Let him do him.
Well, they asked him about the negative talk on the tush push at the combine.
I hope he had something to say.
And here's what he said.
You know, I think I've seen some of the stuff, like, well, it, you know, about what the...
He's trying real
hard. You know,
that
it's an automatic play or, you know, that it's not a... We work really... You know, I almost feel a little insulted because we work so hard at that play. The amount of things that we've looked into how to coach that play, the fundamentals, is always... There's a thousand plays out there, but it comes down to how you teach the fundamentals and how the players go through and do with the fundamentals.
So he goes on for another 3 minutes about the tush push, and I'm not going to listen to 3 minutes about it, but stop being insulted. You won the Super Bowl, bro.
No, you can be insulted about that, for sure. You work, if indeed they are working and coaching up and teaching technique for that specific play, yeah, I feel some type of way if somebody's crying in the background because they can't stop it, and then they wrote some legislation to try to prevent me from being able to do the play. I would feel a way about that. And quite frankly, you got like a much more mature Nick Sirianni right there in that. Cause I've watched him on the sideline go at fans. So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
He could have been much more Philly if
you
wanted to.
You heard the first part of that. He was trying so hard to
step
around the word mines. He was doing such a good job too.
He was definitely mindful of the fact that whatever he said could have been, you know, could somebody could have put a match to it. So he was careful not to leave kerosene behind him. But I think he had the right to be pissed, though.
Atlanta Falcons head coach Raheem Morris said that there's just no other player in our game where you can get behind somebody and push them. I actually think there is some sort of fairness into pushing the quarterback from behind. I'm not going to ban the play. I'm not going to be that guy.
Fairness? There is some type of fairness?
I don't know. There is something to not being able to push the quarterback. I think that's where the play goes wrong because there's zero chance to stop people who are moving forward when you were trying to go the other way. It's not happening.
Yes, No, that's not true. If that's the case, everybody would be doing the tush push.
Yeah, you're right.
It doesn't work. If that was truly the case, I think people would feel differently about this. But it's not.
It is unique to one team.
It's unique to one team. I mean, there's other teams that have done it and had success, but they haven't had the kind of success Philly does. It is an automatic first down, touchdown, whichever one they're trying to get. When they do it.
That is true. I'm not going to be the guy that wants to ban it. I did want to ban it a few years ago because it is really annoying when you're playing against the Eagles and you're like, oh, great, it's fourth and inches.
Don't get in fourth and inches situations. That's how you beat. That's how you got to do it.
Fair enough.
Easier said than done.
Fair enough. Fair. I think the Eagles kind of play for that sometimes because they know they can get it.
Why wouldn't you? Let's just get it. Let's get it to within one.
Yeah.
If we get it to within 1 or 2 yards, we're good.
We're good. Third and five, we don't need to pass. We're just going to run it. We're going to see how much we can get, and then we're going to tush push it the rest
of
the way.
So on third and five, you got to make sure you give up 1 yard or less. Keep them at five. Make them have
That's
to throw
fair.
It. That's just what you got to do.
That's fair. But I think it's hilarious that the Packers are trying to hide behind all this.
I think it is, too. And I think it's even funnier that they tried to get their – I don't know if – I shouldn't say that. I don't know that they tried to get their names off of it. But it went from I saw Green Bay to unidentified team, which I find kind of funny.
That means that they wanted their names off of it.
that's
where we're going with that. All right. Gwynn and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby. We have the Big Five on the other side. And have you heard Channing Frye's opinion as to why no one wants to be the face of the NBA right now?
Yeah, and I think it was kind of tired.
Really?
I think it was kind of tired. I mean, there's some truth to what he said, but
Yeah, we'll get to it in the Big Five next on 97.3 The Fan.
5:36 here in Phoenix, 4:36 out in beautiful San Diego. I'm looking at the backdrop behind you there, Scrape. Looks pretty awesome, as usual.
Pretty fantastic, I gotta say. People often comment on that, and they're like, can you move your head so I can see out the window?
Your head is kind of in the way, dog.
It's always in the way. It's in the way of you looking at the clock. It's in the way of the window.
It looks good, though.
Thank you.
Scraby's got a Big Five lined up for us. Is traffic ready, my friend?
Traffic is ready.
Well, let's check traffic and get to the Big Five.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that time of the show when we check on the latest in sports. Only the most important topics and questions are brought to light.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
These news stories will astound and amaze you. The one, the only.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, we have a quick update on something that we talked about yesterday before we actually get into the Big Five, and then we're going to be talking about the Aztecs, Aaron Rodgers, Channing Frye, and then Matthew Stafford is on his way out of the Rams, I have a feeling, because there's some reports as to what they would do if Matthew Stafford was traded by the Rams, so we'll get to that in a little bit. But yesterday, Chris was talking quite a bit about what happened between Arizona and the BYU BYU and the Arizona fans on Saturday night. The fans were chanting some pretty terrible things to the BYU players, and the Arizona athletic director has come out and they have put out a statement apologizing to BYU for this. Now, it's great to have an apology, but does it really mean anything? It's just a statement.
Yes, just great. Everything can have like actual like feel of justice all the time. Like, what else could be done? Are you looking?
No, I'm not. No, I get what you're saying. Yes,
you know what I'm saying. Like, if they didn't apologize, that's probably as offensive, right? I mean, not owning your behavior. So, I mean, I don't know what else there is that could be done on this in this instance, but it's good to see that. The you said the AD or the
AD, yeah.
The AD is apologizing for behavior. Now, I only know kind of the outskirts of this story. BYU went into Arizona. They won, right?
They won by one, and I think there was a foul or there was something that happened that gave BYU some free throws that put them ahead late in the game, and it caused Arizona to lose. 96-95, yeah. I believe.
And so fans were yelling or saying,
you can't
crazy,
even say
off the wall type stuff.
Yeah, they were basically making fun of their religion.
Yeah, that's usually where people go with that. Unfortunately,
I guess you're right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, apology is in order. I'm glad that they did it.
Yeah, it's better to do it than not do it at all. I'm just going for the hot takes all day today for some reason.
Yeah, hot take Matthew over here.
Number five.
Let's start with the Aztecs. They play New Mexico tonight at home, and we talked to Mark Ziegler earlier, and he basically said he didn't want to say that they need to win the rest of the regular season to get a spot in the tourney without having to win the Mountain West tourney, but they probably need to win tonight and the rest of the way to get that spot. We didn't know what to expect, though, coming into this year, and I think this team has outperformed the expectations of everyone because they are so young. But, Tony, if the Aztecs don't make the tourney, is this a disappointing season?
It's disappointing. I don't know that it's disappointing. It's disappointing from the standpoint that I think we all got our hopes up that it could be something crazy this year, especially after they beat Houston.
Yeah, true.
I think, you know, expectations may have changed at that point. I think at this point, anytime the Aztecs don't get to an NCAA tournament, it's disappointing. I think we have moved beyond, you know, I think we are at the point now where missing will be disappointing.
Which is a good thing for the program, kind of.
I think they've earned that right for them to have that responsibility. I mean, Dutch has just continued what Coach Fish did while he was there, and I think this is what happens when you move into that, you know, next level in terms of expectations. And now the expectation is that, well, we definitely making it. It's just a matter of how far we're going to go when we get in.
That's a good point.
So, yes, if they don't make it, yes, I think it will be disappointing.
I don't know if you heard, Magoon Gwath imaging came back great. No tears. Mark Ziegler even said we may see him before the end of the season. That's good. How good the stuff went.
Good.
Yeah, everybody was very relieved that Magoon Gwath is okay. It does pay to be young. Because it looked bad.
It would have really folded me up. I'd have been out.
Is it disappointing? Kinda, sorta. The reason kinda, sorta is because I don't think that anyone expected this team to win as many games as they have this year. I don't think people expected this team to be as good as they have been this year. So,
do you think people expected them to make the tournament?
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
So the answer is yes. Disappointing season, even though I don't really want to call it.
I don't think saying that if they didn't get in, it would be disappointing. I think that's fair.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that the Aztec program is terrible or it's got some young team. We knew, at least early going in, we knew that could be, you know, kind of a growing pain. They played a tough schedule. We'll see. I think they're going to get in, personally.
Me too.
But it would be disappointing. It would be disappointing if they don't get in, I think.
All right, I'm going to burn my jerseys in the backyard when they don't get in. Never have I ever burned a jersey. Number one, they're way too expensive to burn.
Yeah, that seems ridiculous to
me. It does seem ridiculous. Number four. So I saw this on ESPN today, and the Dodgers payroll has been a pretty hot topic among all the national talk show hosts this week, mainly because the number is so high up there. The projected payroll for the Dodgers on opening day is $393 million, which is obviously the highest in baseball history. And I'm going to take a different stance on this one. I'm not going to complain.
Let's see how different this is.
That the Dodgers are cheaters. I will say this is like kind of borderline video game stuff, though, where you're just stacking a team. But I'm not going to complain, even though I just complained. I'm up first. How much focus will this be in the next CBA? I want it to be a big focus. I do. But Rob Manfred keeps saying that the Dodgers did nothing wrong, which they didn't do anything wrong. So I really don't know. I don't know how much this is going to be a part of their conversations, but I know the guy on the other side knows a lot more about this than I do. So, Tony, what do you think?
I don't know either. Ooh. I think that's the right answer. But I think you'll find out how important this issue is if the players and the owners go into negotiations and we're not hearing this being one of the talking points.
Yeah.
Or things that's being negotiated, that immediately tells you that it's not a big deal. Or give you another scenario. It starts out as something that's an issue, and then pretty quickly it goes away and it's not being discussed. Let you know that it probably isn't as big a deal to the owners as it is to the fans. So I'm more interested because I want to see how important these things are. Because if they don't think, trust me, if the owners think that it is hurting their business, they will do something different, or they will push to do something different.
That's true.
They're not in the business of losing money, period. So if they really believe that a team like the Dodgers is hurting business or is bad for baseball, they'll do something about it.
That's true. When's the next CBA? It's not after, is it before
26?
It's before 26 or after 26? Actually, let me see. MLB CBA. It says... Anyway, I'm not going to look this
26. Up. I think it's 2026, bro.
Okay, 2026. I believe you. I believe you. Let's get to the next.
Number three.
Apparently, Aaron Rodgers was loved by at least some people in the Jets locker room last season. So much so that star defensive tackle Quinnen Williams posted a thumbs down emoji on X when word of the team's plans leaked on February 9th to let him go. New head coach Aaron Glenn said he spoke privately with Williams about it, and Glenn later said, quote, "Listen, this is not going to be the last decision I make that's going to upset some people, and that's okay, but as men, we talk about it. We make sure we keep it in-house, and that's what we're going to continue to do," end quote. Tony, do you agree with this style for the Jets?
What's the style?
Hard nose, you're not going to get away with nothing. Like, that's what Aaron Glenn is trying to establish, like... Wait, no one is above the law.
Where are you? Where are you coming up with that?
Where am I coming up with that? I mean,
yeah. What makes you think that he is doing a, you know, my law or no law or whatever it is?
I did not say my way or the highway. I did not say that.
He's trying to establish the law.
He's trying to establish a culture where no one player is bigger than the team. And Aaron Rodgers.
You're talking about in getting rid of Aaron Rodgers?
Correct.
Or allowing him to go? Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't know you were
because
talking
that
about
will change.
Williams, so.
That should change some of the stuff that happens inside the locker room. But apparently some people were mad. But Aaron Glenn is basically saying, hey, this is my decision. You may not agree with it, but it is what it is, and we're moving forward.
And you're asking me, what's the question?
Do you
again?
Agree with him? I guess that this is a.
I mean, every head coach, new head coach, comes in and establishes his thing one way or another. I think perhaps he did it immediately, unlike my man in Denver, where he like kind of paraded Russell Wilson out there and made him look crazy on multiple occasions. Like, so I prefer that you just do it this way. Otherwise, you're bringing in a quarterback that you probably don't want back, and you don't want to have a sour relationship just for the sake of having one. So why not? If you don't believe in the quarterback, or in this case, the quarterback and Aaron Rodgers, get him out of there. That's what he did. I don't know that it's a, you know, I think he is trying to set culture in terms of. We are a team. If, you know, I think he, as he told Aaron, if he came back, he would have to be there for OTAs. That's the part that he's trying to change. I think he ultimately decided that Aaron Rodgers wasn't the answer for them at quarterback. I think that's ultimately why he let him go, because he'd already established, like, if I bring you back, this is what's going to be required of you.
I agree with it. I do too, and I like Aaron Glenn kind of taking control. Like, this is my team. I'm not saying that he's ruling with an iron thing like that, but
I mean, it's the same concept, right? When, you know, apparently Sean Payton got to Denver, and Russell had his own office, and he had to strip him of all those things because he needed to make him as a part of the team.
I forgot about the office thing.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny.
That's what we're
number two.
All right. On the podcast Road Trippin', former NBA player Channing Frye has a pretty good theory, at least in my mind, as to why the talent in the NBA is being questioned right now. Here he is talking about that.
90s basketball, Michael Jordan and Kobe, was not as clean as y'all think it was. Y'all forget that Jordan left the league for 2 years. Y'all forget that Kobe, rest in peace, quit on his team in the playoffs and did not shoot the basketball. So all this Kobe, Jordan, oh, he's not this, he's not that, that is propaganda. Every great player, whether that's Ant, Wemby, Bron, you know, Steph, this, that, you know they compare him to? 40 years ago. The rules weren't even the same. You're not really watching help side defense. Who's doing this? What is this rule? What is that rule? You're not watching. Nobody celebrates these new people. So why the f*** would anybody want to be the face of this league where you're going to get s*** on every network for not being somebody from 40 years ago.
I think his delivery is hilarious to me because he,
I like Shannon.
He's speaking exactly like I want to say that, all that. Like, just,
yeah, I know you do.
40
you
bleeping do. Years ago. So that was Channing Frye in his opinion. And so I'm up first, I guess. Do we need to stop looking to the past for current comparisons? Yes! I've been saying this for years. Chris isn't here to defend himself, and sometimes going back to the past is a good way to compare things. But we don't need to do it every time. There is a reason that we have this sounder, because it makes Chris realize that he's going back in time. I can't stand that, well, this guy's not as good as Bill Russell is. Channing Frye said it. They played in different eras. You can't compare the guys. Why can't Bill Russell be good and LeBron be good? You know what I'm saying? So I appreciate Channing Frye for saying this, but Tony, I know, before the break, he said he had some feelings about it. So what do you think?
I just think there's, I mean, what Shannon, a lot of what Shannon said, Channing said was true. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't know that there's any more of it than there used to be. I mean, we just got a lot more people talking about it, right? Everybody's got a blog. They're talking about it. They're criticizing. I mean, people who never played are actually out there criticizing. People who did play actually out there criticizing. But they also highlight the guy. Here's the thing. And this is where I get kind of lost on it. You have a league in which is covered worldwide, basically. And the idea that no one wants to be the face because you're criticized is crazy to me. I mean, it's your league. If you're not going to do, if somebody in the league is not willing to go out and be the face, then I mean, it eventually harms your league. You know
it
what
does,
I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't want to face scrutiny, don't play. I mean, this has been a part of sports, and yes, it is under a way, way, way brighter and more lights than there has ever been in time. But it comes with the territory. So, yeah, that's fine. You don't have to be the face of the league. But when people lose interest because you don't have said face, that doesn't help your cause as players in the NBA. It hurts your cause. So, and I think it's overblown. I think eventually one of these young dudes, probably Anthony Edwards, will eventually take over and be that guy. It just takes time. Michael didn't become that dude until he was heavily criticized, until he won in the 90s, which was close to 30.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same. Kobe came in at really young, played on a team with Shaq, was able to get some early, but he won by himself later in his career. He became the Kobe that everybody loved later in his career. So, you know, I think sometimes we get so caught up in the noise of all of the criticism, and there's more criticism than there's ever been, and so I get it, but it comes with the territory.
All right, that was a really good answer. Katrina said, save this for 20 years from now when Scraby gets old man boomer gene, and I'm like, Jackson Merrill, no one ever is going to have the same work ethic as Jackson Merrill. That's going to be me in 20 years from now. All right, we still have number one to go, but we'll also recap what happened with the Padres today on 97.3 The Fan.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.